Meseches Chulin Daf Nun Aleph is dedicated Le'ilu Nishmas Reb Aryeh Lei Ben Reb Zev Zichorin Levracha, whose yahrzeit is on Yud Aleph Shvat, dedicated by Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Weinstein. May the Torah study learned in this shiur be an everlasting schus for his neshama.
The following shiur has been presented by Rav Yehoshua Grunwald, Dayan at the Beis Havad of Lakewood, New Jersey, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
Chulin Daf Nun Aleph. The Gemara here and the top of the Amud Aleph continues from Nun Amud Beis. Tanu Rabbanon, the Gemara says, we learned in a Braisa, Machach Nimtzeis Bo'idi Beis HaKaisois, if a needle is found embedded in the thickness of the Beis HaKaisois, the Beis HaKaisois is the Rasekulim, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, and if it's found protruding through the double wall of this Beis HaKaisis, it had echad Sheira, Mishnei Stodim Trefa. If it goes through one side of the wall, so then it's still kosher. If it goes through both sides of the wall, so then it is rendered a Trefa, then it has a halacha of being a Trefa. It's included in the trefois that are not allowed to be eaten. If we see on the needle that there is a little bit of blood, then the yodua shalifnei shchito. Here, the braisa goes on to discussing, that's a draft further on. If it's a question of whether the needle punctured the Beis HaKaisis before Shechita, or perhaps it only happened after Shechita, so then I say, first we discuss whether it's a trefa or not, then I discuss whether, if I don't know if we actually punctured it before the Shechita or not, and then I say, if there's a drop of blood on the needle, so then I know that the puncture occurred before the Shechita. If there's no blood spot and the needle, so then then you know for sure that it only punctured it after the shechita, and in essence, therefore, the animal is kosher. Then the braisa continues on to go to a halacha that's not so relevant to kashrus per se. It's more to another sugya. It's really to the sugya of chayshim mishpat, to the laws of mamonis. Higmir piyamako, if a scab, formed over the opening of this puncture, piyodua sheshleishi yamin kaidim shchita, then I know that the puncture happened 3 days before the shchita. Lo higmir piyamako, if there's no scab over the puncture, then, hameit mechavei alav arayo, then the one that wants to take it away, he has to bring a proof. And him, it's subject to bring proof. So, proof, or not proof, 3 days before Shechita, this whole discussion is obviously not really for kashrus per se. To know whether the animal is kosher or not, it's only necessary to know whether it happened whether the puncture was there at the time of Shechita or whether it wasn't there at the time of Shechita. To tell me whether the puncture happened 3 days before only pertains to a different sugya. If, let's say, we know, now that we established that if there is a puncture at the time of Shechita, it's a trefa, now we have to discuss what is the halacha if this person that shechted the animal just recently bought the animal. And the halacha is that if somebody bought an animal that is indeed a trefa, even though they did not know at the time of sale, they only discovered it after they shecht it, nevertheless it will turn retroactively into a mekach tos. Somebody that buys an animal to shecht and eat, they don't want to purchase an animal that's a trefa. They are not going to benefit. Their benefit is greatly diminished if the animal purchased is a trefa. They're not allowed to eat it. They're going to shecht it. Then they won't be able to eat the meat. They'll have to sell it to a goy. And the value is greatly diminished. And therefore, if it turns out that the animal he bought was a trefa, even though neither party knew of it at the time of sale, nevertheless, it will be a mekach tos, it will be considered that there was a defect in the item purchase, and he'll be able to render the sale retroactively invalid. So the question is, but we have to know if that problem was actually there at the time of the purchase. Just because, if let's say there was a 3-day period, or 4-day period, or 2-day period, between when he bought the animal and when he shechted the animal, perhaps during that short period of time, the animal became a treifa. Just because we shechted and we found the treifa, tarfus, doesn't mean it was there at the time of sale. So through that, the Braisa says that you're able to tell if the treifa was the fact that it had a needle there. So then we're able to tell, and it punctures this Beit HaKodesh. So we look and see if there's a scab or no scab. If there's a scab, then I know that it happened 3 days before, so then look at when the purchase was. If there's no scab, then we don't know when it happened. And since we don't know, so the Braisa says, the one who wants to take away from his friend, he has to bring a proof. What does it mean, the one that wants to take from his friend has to bring proof? So simply you would say that whoever is holding on to the money is the muchzak. Usually we have a mishpat, law of mamonis, monetary laws. Usually we say whoever is holding on to the money wins. He has the upper hand. And therefore you would probably assume that when the Gemara says Hamuitzi mechadei olavarayo, the Gemara means to say that whoever's holding on to the money is the winner. To a large degree, this is what the Rambam will hold, to a large degree. However, the Tosfos right here says not like that. Tosfos, and this is also the opinion of Rashi and the Rosh, and Tosfos himself, in Mesachta Ksubis Daf Ayin Vav Amid Beis, the Tosfos right here says that Hamoyt Mechavei Olavayai means like this. The sale is assumed, if they did the action of the sale, then it's assumed that the sale was valid. And therefore, if someone wants to invalidate the sale, he's going to have to prove that the sale is invalid. And therefore, even if the buyer did not yet give the money for the purchase, he will be responsible to pay the money out of pocket, despite the fact that there is a question of whether he owes the money or not. He will actually be obligated to pay the money out because we assume that it was a treifa. In other words, until proven otherwise, since there was an action of a sale, since we saw what looks like a sale, it seemed to have been a sale. So we say, if you want to prove that there's no sale, you have to bring proof that there's no sale. According to the Rambam, we say, basically these are clouds, whoever's reshus it's in, has to bring the proof that it was otherwise. So according to the Rambam, we don't say that just because there was a sale, but rather we say, since this suffix happened in the rishus, in the possession, in the land of the buyer, since the animal was residing in the land of the buyer took the animal home and there the buyer shechted it, so he has to bring proof. It's assumed that it happened in the location of where the suffix is found, the geographical location, so to say, of where the suffix is found, is assumed that that's where it happened. To go to the understanding of the Machlokes, the Rambam and the Tosfos, is well beyond the scope of this year. But it's a very important Machlokes which has very practical ramifications in Halacha. And the Machlokes between the Rambam and Tosfos is actually a Machlokes Mechaber and Riman Shulchan Aruch. This Machlokes follows through that the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch and Simin Choshe Mishpat Simin Yesh Chav Dalid follows the opinion of the Rambam, and Rimo there follows the opinion of the Tosis and the Rosh. At least he says that Yesh Aimrim, that there are those, he quotes this opinion of Tosis and the Rosh, to include it as a possibility of how to paskin. Furthermore, this great machloek is how to learn Tosis. Why is it that according to Tosis, I say that we assume the sale is valid, and he even has to pay out of pocket? Why is it that according to Tosis, here we have a question, we have a doubt. We don't know when the animal became a treifah. So in other words, there's a suffix, was the sale valid, was the sale not valid? So usually we say, as we mentioned, in the entire Choshen Mishpat, we say, whoever is trying to get money from his friend, he has the burden of proof. Despite that, Tosis and the Rosh say here, we don't say that. So why are Tosis and the Rosh saying that this case is different than everywhere else? So to that, there's numerous answers. One way of answering is the Mahalach that I was saying the Tosis until now, and that is that since some Mefarshim explain that since here there was an action of a sale, there's an assumption that the sale is Kayon. Since we saw a sale, we saw this action of a sale, we saw the motions and the actions of a sale, and it looked to us like a sale, so therefore it's different than other cases of where there's fakis and mamonis, where there's doubts of pertaining to money. However, others explain that that's not the explanation of Tosis. Rather, the explanation of Tosis is for other ways. So one of the other ways is that it depends on a cheskes haguf. Since the question at hand is really dependent on whether the animal changed its status from a healthy animal to a treif animal, so we say that hamed ha behima al cheskos, it is a cheskes haguf. And when is a cheskes haguf, that's a much stronger thing that has a that's going against the cheskes mamon. And on that I say that despite it's a tiny suffix, I say that the burden of proof is on, we say a cheskes haguf, we assume that the animal was healthy until proven otherwise, and therefore we assume that the animal only became a treifah in the possession when it was already owned by the buyer. Now, derech agav, and as a side note, everybody, even those that don't explain Tosis like that, and even the Rambam that disagrees with Tosis, agrees that cheskes haguf is a very strong thing, and if the teveya would have a tainas bari, if the teveya would be saying, I know for sure that this is what happened, and a cheskes haguf would help him, everybody would agree that the cheskes haguf side would win, until proven otherwise with a good proof. Be that as it may, let's see if we can flesh it out by bringing an example that would be more practical than somebody that sold an animal. Let's say a story like this. Let's say Reuven sold a car to Shimon. It was a used car, and Reuven sold it to Shimon, and Shimon went and Shimon parked the car in front of his house. He took it away from the possession, from the garage, from the parking lot of Reuven the seller, and he brought it to his own parking lot, to his own garage. He actually parked it in a public parking place, and a couple weeks later, before he even got to use the car, he came looking at the car, and he noticed that a pickup truck went and totaled, crashed into the new car, newly bought car, and totaled the car. So the next day, he got a tow truck to come and tow away the car and see if it's fixable or not fixable, get a quote from the insurance. And his friend of who has a body shop and is a mechanic took the car, towed it to his body shop, towed it to his place where he looks at cars, and he looked at the car, puts it on the rack, took it apart, and he says the mechanic, I opened up the car, and you should know, lo and behold, besides for the fact that now the car has a lot of body damage, but I looked at the car and I saw that in truth the transmission was really severely damaged. There was severe internal damage in the transmission, in the motor, and I only noticed it because I opened it up now that they had an accident, but it's clear, or perhaps maybe likely, that this damage was really there at the time of purchase. So now, Shimon, the buyer of this car, wants to go back to Reuven and say, you know, forget about the fact that this car had an accident. It wasn't my fault the accident happened. Why should I suffer the loss of the damage of the accident of this pickup truck that I don't know where he is? He walked off. I can't find him. I can't track him down. Why should I suffer that loss? Really? It was a mekach tos. Really, you sold me a faulty car, a car that had a broken transmission, a broken engine, and we both did not know about it. And therefore, I want to retract on the sale. It's an invalid sale. And therefore, you should give me all my money back, and we should invalidate the sale, and then you'll give me all the money back, and you'll have to deal with this broken car and suffer the loss. You, the seller, will have to, in fact, suffer the loss. That is the, perhaps, let's present such a case where the buyer and the seller have such an argument. And the question is, well, who's going to be right? Could Shimon invalidate the sale on such grounds? So, more likely than not, it would probably be pretty difficult to say that it's proven beyond doubt that the transmission was already eroded at the time of sale. Well, it depends. Perhaps it could be proven. But if, let's say, for argument's sake, it can't be proven, so then it will fall into this discussion that we have now. According to Tosfos, since the sale went through the motions of a sale, then even though the buyer didn't yet pay the money, he still cannot invalidate the sale. According to the Rambam, it depends with whose reshus it's in. If it's in nobody's reshus, so perhaps we will say, in fact, a regular muchzik tikka halacha, that whoever has the money will keep the money if the car is in no man's land. If the car is in some land, then we will assume that whoever's land is in, that's where the problem happened. So this just brings to life how this sugyo could be quite practical. The Paiskim talked about another case. What happens if somebody bought a watch, and he bought a watch from a seller, and a few days later the watch stops, and he takes it to a repairman, and the person opens up the watch, and he sees that it was really missing parts, it was really put together faulty, and he sees that it never had some pieces. So do I say over here, or perhaps maybe it broke later, do I say over here the sugya that we have by us? So the Divi Malkiel says that even if it would be a suffix of whether originally it was faulty or perhaps it broke later, says the Divi Malkiel, since you're dealing with the possibility that it was never made correctly, then even Tosfos would agree that and at the very least, if the buyer did not yet pay for the watch, he would for sure not have to pay for the watch. And that is because if you say that the explanation of Tosfos is because of the Cheskes HaGuf, you can only say a Cheskes HaGuf if you know that at one time it was for sure a manufactured right. In other words, by an animal, you could say the fact that it was an animal until now, for sure it was born healthy. For sure when it was born it was not a treifa. It's only that there's a possibility that later it became a treifa, so on that I'm able to say that it has a Cheskes HaGuf. I'm able to say that it could be assumed that it stayed healthy until the last possible moment that it changed otherwise. But in such a case, it's possible that the watch was never made properly. So then there's no Cheskes HaGuf. You can't say, there's nothing you can say that for sure it was originally good and that it stayed on such status. You can't say that it remained on its status if you don't know for sure, if you can't establish that it had a good status. If you can't establish that for sure at one point it was good, then you can't say that there's a Cheskes HaGuf. And therefore, says the Divi Malkiel, at least according to that understanding of Tosfos, even Tosfos would agree that at least if Shimon did not yet give the money, he would not have to pay out the money. So I was just mentioning these things just to bring to life how the discussion over here of this Gemara with the Tosfos, with the Rambam, different ways how to learn the Gemara, could make actual differences in halacha. They can have very practical ramifications. But it's, as we said before, it goes well beyond the scope to really, the scope of this year, to really get into too many details and to give a final ruling on practical cases, since there are so many details of the halacha, of the Rishonim, that get involved. I would like to continue on with some other halachas that perhaps we could walk away from this Gemara with in some practical halachas. And the Rishonim say, you see from this Gemara, the Rishonim right here in this Gemara has discussed another halacha. The Rishonim say that just like we see from this Gemara, that if an animal is found to be a treifa, so now the buyer could retract on the sale and say, I never wanted to buy an animal that's a treifa, and therefore it's a mekach kos, and therefore I get my money back, and I invalidate the sale. So too, even if the animal was found to be safek treifa, even if the animal was found to be that it's not kosher because of a chumrah, even if it's found that it was just not glatt kosher, even if it was found that it's not necessarily according to strict halacha, not kosher, just that the bottom line is that Klal Yisrael Firtzach, that the custom, the common custom in all of Klal Yisrael is not to eat such a thing, he could also back out of the sale. Don't get up and tell me that just because strictly, it's strictly, according to strict law, theoretically would be kosher, so therefore I sold you a good animal, and therefore you can't invalidate the sale. Say the Rishonim, no. Even when the animal was only unfit according to custom, according to common custom, he also could invalidate the sale. And this could be nogea. This could be applicable to other areas of halacha as well. For example, if somebody, if Ruvain sold to Shimon an esrig or a lulav, and then it was discovered that really that lulav or esrig had some blemish that the common custom is not to use such a lulav and esrig, even though theoretically, strictly, it would not be not kosher, but if it's really common custom that really nobody uses it, then he would also be able to invalidate the sale. Rishonim discuss that if it's something that's a sircha, and it's something that's very common, some Rishonim say, if it's like very, like, it's like not glatt kosher, and it's very common that animals have this not glatt. It's not rare. It's actually common that the animal could turn out being having such a chumra dikat tarfus. So some Rishonim say then the fact that the buyer didn't specify that if it will turn out to have such a problem, he doesn't want it, then I assume that he obviously accepts such a sale. So again, this is not simply because it's a chumrah, but if it's something that's very common, the fact that it's very common, according to some Rishonim, again, to Machlokes Rishonim, there are two opinions, but according to some, if the type of problem is something that's very common, and the buyer did not specify that he doesn't want it if it has that very common problem, so then we say he obviously accepted the sale even on the possibility that it will have that problem. And it's a machlekes rishonim, and the Aruch HaShulchan says that being that it's a machlekes rishonim, it's going to end up being a sega dedino, and therefore if the lekeach did not give the money, he would not have to give the money, and if he did give the money, he would not be able to get his money back. That is for that case. There's another case that the Tosfos can discuss, and that is what happens if something is mutter only because it's a hefsa meruba. Things that are only permitted because it's a hefsa meruba. So some people are nizer not to eat it. So the first question is, let's say Reuven has an animal, and there was a halachic question on the animal, and halacha says that you're allowed to eat this animal, you're allowed to be lenient if there's a hefsim meruba, if there's a large loss involved. So do I say that only this person that has a loss is allowed to eat it? Or perhaps I say that he's allowed to sell it and his buyer is also allowed to eat it, because if we won't permit his buyer to eat it, then he again has a loss. He was never planning on eating it himself. He can't eat a whole animal himself. And therefore, just like we permit the loss to he himself, so too must be we permit the loss to others as well. So the Chasam Sofer, which is quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva, near Adir Simen Lamed Aleph, actually says that he is mitzadeh that it's not motor to other people, and he says even if it is motor to other people, even if it is permitted for other people to eat it, but at the very least, if he didn't tell the buyer that it has such an issue, then likely such a thing would be in mekach tos, and that's the Divrei Malkiel. The Tshuva's Divrei Malkiel, Chelek Gimel Simen Tzadi, disagrees, and he says no. If the halacha says that such a thing is permitted when it's a hefsim meruba, so then it must be that for others it's also permitted. Once it's permitted, it's permitted. If you're not going to permit it for others, so then right away we're not saving the first person from having a loss. Then the Divrei Malkiel says, at least others say, that the second point of the Chasam Sofer, that perhaps it's a mekach tos, even if you'll say that it's permitted to somebody else, but if the fact that he didn't tell him that it has such a problem will be a mekach tos, then the Divrei Malkiel is also not so happy. That if the person is a type of person that we know is machmer and not eating things that a chacham was matir, then fine, then I can hear you that you can't sell a person to a person that's makbid and not eating something that a chacham was matir without letting him know that this is what's involved in this thing you're selling. But for the standard person, for a person that you do know is not makbid, so then again, why is there a mekach tos? Why is such a thing a wrong sale? All you have in our sugyo, the only thing you find in our sugyo that it's a mekach tos if you sell him something, is only if it's common custom not to eat it because of the problem. But if it's not common custom not to eat it, just because there's a chumra involved in not eating it, why should that make it be a mekach tos? Why should that invalidate the sale? And it seems that that is the main way the halacha like this Divrei Malkiel. Nevertheless, I was told that Belsky said that definitely, certainly, it's the wrong thing for a kashrus agency to be serving, to be selling things that are permitted in Makom Hefsim Meruba. Certainly, kashrus agencies have to ask their own shailas when they have to sell it, when they're allowed to sell it as par with the kashrus label and when not. And we leave it for them to, and their poskim to decide each case individually, when they're able to permit it and let it go through, and when not. This concludes here.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultation, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Havad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.